This is Kevin Campbell, and you're listening to Chewing the Cud with the Irish Toffees. Come on, you Blues!
Welcome along, folks, to the next episode of Chewing the Cud. Today, we're going to look back at a pretty abysmal display, to be honest, against Arsenal, and discuss a little bit on the takeover, or possible takeover, and then we'll look ahead at that store to Brentford on Saturday evening. Just a double header today, myself and Rich. Afternoon, Rich.
Hey, Joe. How are things?
Oh, good. Yeah, the two boys. Collie's prepping for a promotional interview, so best of luck, Collie. And Chris is probably just fed up. I don't fucking blame him, to be honest. All right, Richard, listen, I know people say we moan, and as Dom calls it, piss them on, but it just can't dress up what we're seeing on Sunday. And I know we're playing Arsenal, but it's one of possibly the most lacklustre efforts from an Everton football team I have seen in a long, long time. I know we've had shit displays and bad results, but that was just so, so flat and demoralising. Is kind of, I don't want to get over depressing about, but it was just nothing. Like I said, flat as a pancake.
It was soul destroying to watch. It was absolutely draining because there was nothing in it from very, very fair. And you say, look, fair enough, it's Arsenal. But I mean, you have to have a go at some point. And there was nothing. It was basically sit in, park the bus, let's try squeeze out a nil all at best. And yeah, I mean, it was absolutely horrible. I mean, talking about 20 minutes, I'd say by the time we got out of our own half, you know, we did nothing. We cannot string passes together. You know, we say, oh, we have a big man up front, but if there's no one willing to run off him or to play off him, what is the point of having him up there? Because you may as well just have Maupet. It's what we were giving out about, that he's isolated the wrong side. He can only do so much. It was as bad as I've seen and kind of set through for a long, long time, you know. And you can give out about lots of things, but the idea is that you got to find a way to win. You got to find a way to create chances, and we didn't even look to do so. And I think that was it. You know, you can, and again, it's easy to make the caveat that it's Arsenal. You know, they're a good side, and you say, right, we were kind of in the game for a long period, and you know, it took a good finish. So we did defend well, but from our side of things, it's not enough, you know.
Yeah.
And the fans have every right to, because if you're paying good money to come in and watch that at home, you know, it's not good enough.
Yeah, the gas thing is, it's not just the lack of creativity. It's just the flatness of it all, like I said at the start. The absolute no balls, no one there to sit in the middle and, like, if you want, I was talking to actually Joe Parkinson after the match in the Windsor. And I said, Jesus, Joe, screaming out for someone like you or Barry Horn, someone in the middle to just stick a leg in, kick lumps, or, you know, don't get me wrong, I don't want people going getting yellows and reds and all that, but just make a presence felt. And again, there was an Arsenal fella I was talking to after the match, and he goes, Jesus, that was a boxing match. It had been called off after half an hour because we just didn't lay a finger on them. And it goes back to my point a couple of weeks ago. The midfield just have not got a clue what their job is. The three in there, Onana, Gana and Decore, have not got an absolute idea of what each of them has to do. They're running around like headless chickens, and no one's sitting, no one's holding. And when the attack, it seems to me, okay, whoever's forward first, just go. There's no structure to the midfield, which when we lose the ball then, we're just overrun. And Jesus, Declan Rice could have sat in an armchair, by the way, because he had absolutely nothing to do. And it's not just a one-off. This is just it's creeping in where the three of these, and this comes from the manager as well, which, the three of these have no specific role. This is from the stands looking at it, that they're just, we'll just put the trees in there and make it up as you go along. And it's just not good enough.
No, it's not even close, because you say, right, that if, because first of all, you look at the performance in a whole, and you look back to our first game under Dyche last season, and they were acres apart, like,
you know,
they weren't really, no energy, no desire to get involved. And like you said, not to be just busting in, but to be shown a bit of effort is basically what it is. But I think it's a tactic. You know, we talk about midfield and the day, there's no cohesion between them. They don't really know what they're doing. But I think on Sunday, the idea was just, let's just all sit in front of the back four. And if it's him, we lump it up to Beto. Decora's job was to try to make up that ground in between. But the ground is huge in between, because we're sitting so deep. And it's just, you know, they're on top of one another, and then they're nowhere, because everybody's bunched in together. So, but it has been. It really, we don't know, is Onana going to stay? Is he going to play further up? And until they actually kind of say, right, this is the way we're going to line out, you know, it doesn't look like there's any set structure there. And as you said, that they don't really know themselves. Obviously, we know Decore is the one who's supposed to push on. But between the, we talk about not being able to play with a two. You know, right now we can't play with a three there, because the balance just isn't there. There's no one to put a pass between the three of them. I mean, Onana is capable of passing, but his strength for me is kind of getting on it, driving forward, maybe looking for something a bit longer. Mm. But short passing in between, you know, between Decore and Ghana, my good God, you'd see better in tune of football on a Saturday morning, Sunday morning after a load of pints. Like,
yeah, but you know, I think it goes back to what I said, that they don't know, or they're not told what to do. Like, if one sits, just do what Declan Rice did, or has done from the start to sit. Just sit in front of the back four and do not move within outside a 10-yard circle if you want. Just sit there, protect the back four. But like you said, because we look like we played a counter-attack game, sit in when we get the ball. But when we got the ball, we didn't. No one went. The only person who went was Beto, and he was more often than not isolated. And when the ball was hoofed up to him, Gabriel or Saliba or whatever come in, give the Rice, and Arsenal are at us again. So the structure, like you said, has to come from the manager. But just do your job. Do what you're told. Just sit there. And if there is a chance to get forward on the counter-attack, fine. But don't. The whole three of us go. And then when we lose the ball, we're fucked, because teams are all over us. So if you're going to play a counter-attack game, play, but make sure everyone's on the same page. Like you said, it's like watching 8-year-old kids across the park just throw the ball in the middle of them, and they all just run around like loonies. So it, for the, and it's not just a once off. It's not because we're doing it against Art. It's happened so many times under Dyche. I know the noise is happening about when you stay, when you go. That's down the road, but I don't think it's as far down the road as some people think.
No, and I would agree to that. I'll get to that in a second. But I think, first of all, when you say, when you have a midfield as ineffective of that, as those three were, and then McNeil and Danjuma were not able to get involved in the game at all. And if that was the case, because they're sitting back on top of the full backs, like, I mean, just push on up, so that at least if you're going long to Beto to try to get up, that there's something there to feed off. And not once was it done. So the boys were kind of lost in between all, because they were coming back so far, just trying to crowd it out. And if you say, fine, we're going to park the bus and we're going to do that, but you got to give yourself some bit of an outlet. And we just didn't have anything in transition. It wasn't even part of a plan, because if it was, you couldn't see it at any stage. You know, I think we ran into the box once that time that Decore kind of went over. But apart from that, we didn't try to go forward at all.
No.
You know, that's the... Yeah, you can take getting beaten, but you just have a go, have a plan, look like there's a structure, look like we're building towards something. Whereas this was big time, a couple of steps backwards for me, based on, oh, you know what, our home performance has been well and we've been beaten. But this was, it was demoralising defeat. Even, you say 1-0, but we were battered, like,
yeah,
you know, we were just hanging on. As you said, the boxing was a good analogy, because, you know, it was game over after, you know. And when you're dealing with the quality that they have, they're going to get a break, they're going to get something. it's really tough to keep defending to that level for 90 minutes and keep. And to be fair, look, we frustrated him for a long period. You know, got lucky with the offside, which I think if they'd have scored early, they probably would have put four or five past us the way we had set up. You know, and there was no change. You know, we left it really, really late to say, oh, let's bang on a couple of attackers and try to swing things kind of when we went into the last 10. But it's too little too late at that stage, you know.
Yeah,
I think you said it earlier about getting fans involved and not a tackle, but, you know, just something. Show a bit of intent, show a bit of fight. And it changes the atmosphere around the ground. It changes everything because fans need to be given something.
Yeah.
And there wasn't once on Sunday where you could say, that's what we want to see. Yeah. You know, there was nothing to relate to. That jumps out to me anyway.
Yeah, the only thing that got the fans going, and like I said, I was sitting at the Gladys Street, was that we can't keep blaming referees. Like, what? When you perform poorly, you can't just blame a referee. But this referee was an absolute embarrassment. So many things he got wrong. It was just ridiculous. Arsenal players start dropping like flies. And like, there's one part where I think Beto went in the back of Gabriel and he hit him on the thigh or, you know, around the hamstring area. And he went down. Ref was playing on, and then he just started tapping his head as if say it's a head injury, and the ref stopped play, which was just, but it happened two or three times. But we can't keep blaming referees because, and Gary Neville, I had it written down, Gary Neville, I didn't hear the comment, but I read about it. He said, Goodison is dreary now, and he used to be a hotbed, and he hated coming out. Well, sorry, Gary, but if you're going to watch tortured shit like that every couple of weeks, there's nothing, like you said, there's nothing to get you off your seat. And the only thing that gets you off your seat is, like you said, a good early tackle and this is it, we're up for it. Not one player was up for that at all because it was just, embarrassing is one of the words that was thrown around. But just, like you said, it just drains you watching that absolute lack of effort. That's the killer. It's not, don't get me wrong, and we've said it hundreds of times on this podcast, that no one likes to lose. But if someone said to me, you're going to lose 1-0 to Arsenal, but you put a shift in and you gave everything and blah, 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 you don't mind that. At least you could say, but losing 1-0 to Arsenal, who are, like I said, I was with an Arsenal fan, he said, they didn't have to do anything. It was a Sunday stroll around the park. It was just, I keep embarrassing this. It's mild, because some of the comments around the ground, and then I've seen on a few Facebook pages, oh, I found a season ticket on the ground outside, and I found this in the schoolyard across from Goodison. I think lads just walked out and said, fuck this. And but it just puts you off making the whole effort of going over, and especially after what happened with the match being switched and people changing flights and extra hotels and loads of money, and then to go over and just watch that absolute lack of, it was a lack of effort. No, there's nothing else. Just shit.
For the first time that I can remember, I think it was the first time that I was kind of glad that flights and things didn't work out for me and I didn't actually get to make it, you know. And that's a crazy thing to say.
It's true.
Then I was glad I didn't make it. Game was over, television off, I'm out of here. Just, you know, I need to forget about it. Didn't see any kind of post-matches or anything like that. But I know what you're saying, kind of saying about we need something in the ground and we need this, and Gary Neville talking about the atmosphere. I think there's obviously a lot more going on within the club that's seeping in.
Of course.
Into the match day. Yeah. You go in, that's what you're talking about. And everybody has, what's going on? Oh, are we going to be around in a couple of years? And that's obviously feeding into everybody's mindset. And there's a bigger picture here rather than just what's going on in the pitch as well. You know, there's a takeover. There's a future of a club. There's, you know, there's a whole lot more. And it's obviously feeding in, but you need to get something back. This match day should nearly be your distraction from the bigger picture.
Hmm.
You know, it shouldn't be affecting players, or not players on the pitch, but performances on the pitch. And for me, it's just set up, I guess, you know. Just doesn't look like we have a plan, and it's, you know, we're turning into Burnley Mark II, you know, under Dyche, where it's a case of, right, let's barely hang in there and we'll draw a couple of games. But ultimately, you know where you're going to be ending up, which is down around the bottom 3, 4, 5 in the league at best. And it's a poor league, you know. And look, you can isolate Arsenal aside, but ultimately you want to be seeing progress on the way that you're trying to play. Mm. And I didn't see it the weekend. Maybe, you know, you can isolate games. You can say Arsenal aside, probably do the same against City. They're probably the two best footballing sides in it. But I mean, now, you know, you're what are we, 12 losses out of 16 at home.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what way you dress that up, that's horrific. Horrific, you know. So, you know, we talked about that there's noise about whether he'll be kind of, is he going to last the term or whatever. But I'd be kind of looking at the next three games and saying that it's shit or bust for him. Because
I'd look at two. Rich, to be honest, just to Brentford, yeah. And if we do not beat Luton at home, he has to go. Whether it's a Hurlum or Scabby one, yeah.
6 points in the next 9 are imperative. You have to get 6 from 9, you know, from the next 3, and that's kind of, so Luton is definitely a big one. So why even, depending on how Brentford goes, if we lose that and you don't beat Luton, I think it's curtains.
It has to be, because I'm genuinely not putting Luton down, but they should be the whipping boys of the league. Haven't been in the league forever. I don't think I've ever heard of any other players, to be honest. And it's just not being smart. But if we cannot beat Luton at Goodison Park, not even handsomely, just like I said, just a scabby one, just 3 points is an absolute minimum for him to stay in the job. And if we draw, I don't think we get out there. We'll get into the Brentford game in a minute, but I don't think we get out there. They're one of these teams, like similar to West Ham, Brighton and so on, who've just sailed past us while we've stood still and absolutely done nothing and blamed this, blamed that, blamed the fans. And actually, going back to what you said about the stuff off the pitch, in the last year or so, all the protests that have gone on, marches and flags and banners and stuff, when the football started, that's been put aside, and it hasn't affected the atmosphere within the ground, apart from obviously the stay back or the stand up protest. But now it's just toxic from start to finish. Like, you're depressed going into the game, you're even more depressed coming out of the game. It's just, and I mentioned it a couple of years ago, that if the club lose the fans, that's the end. It's gone, and it's really, really getting so close to it now, because what's going on off the pitch or what's not going on, it's just an absolute disaster and a shit show. No one knows what's going on, because there's no communication. You said before, the lack of communication is just ridiculous. But It's seeping into the ground now, where the atmosphere used to. It was, the football game was a separate entity from everything that's going on. But it's just that cloud is over the match now, and it looks like it's affecting the players, which it shouldn't. I know we can blame tactics and poor this and poor that, but it just looks like everyone is being affected by what's going on off the pitch.
Yeah, and I suppose when you look at it, it's understandable. If your business is going to be taken over, you don't know what's going to happen. Say, right, I've just signed here. Am I going to be shipped off again? And look, you know, there's a whole lot more. There's a lot of people, not just players, who are involved here. And they don't know what's going on within the club. So it's obviously something that'd be whispering around training grounds, and there's this and there's that happening, and they're going to do this. And, you know, the same way social media can be rife, the same way workplaces can be rife, and there'll be different rumours that'll be flying around. So, it's worrying. But, I mean, if it's a thing that we were getting results in the field, I won't say kind of even winning, that we were doing okay results-wise, you'd forget about it.
Correct.
You'd move on and say, right, what will be, we'll carry on. But I think it's because both of them are so, results are bad, future's kind of unknown, and it's all negative press that's coming out. It's all just feeding into the toxicity that you said, and it's really, really bad. But in regards to kind of results, you look at Villa last season, and they made the change early, binned off Gerrard, got a decent manager in who got him playing football, and look at him now. you know, and I would think that that's, there's no point in waiting until January and say, oh, we give him another couple of games, we give him another couple of games. No. But the question is, like, if it's a thing that we don't get the results that we need in the next few, who sacks him?
See, this is the thing.
Who doesn't want to be there.
If he's sacked, Mashiri's not going to sack him because he means he has to pay him out of his own pocket. And then 777, listen, they haven't taken over yet. It's still being looked at. So they don't have the power. They don't have the power to sack him. So I like Sean Dyche. I like him because he talks. He talks. He doesn't bullshit. He says it as it is. But if it's not happening on the pitch, just say it, Sean. No, it's just it's dinosaur football. I liken him to like a similar to Benitez, where it's this way and that's the only way. There's nothing, and I keep going on about his. He waits so long to make substitutions. It's ridiculous. And then when he brought Dom on and took Beto off, put the two of them up front. Have a go. Because there's no way we were playing through Arsenal. Because, like I said, their midfield were just everywhere. Odegaard just ran like an absolute Duracell bunny. He was everywhere. But like that, Declan Rice just sits there mopping everything up. So we weren't going to play through them. So just put Dom and Beto up and just... because we're under pressure late on, just lump the ball into them. Because that's the only way we're going to score at the moment is by like a free kick, a corner, like a set piece. We're not going to pay 10 or 12 passes and go through a team and bang it in the back of the net. It's just not in that team. So it's just depressing. It's draining. It's draining.
It's draining is been very good to it. And I suppose the only positive to say that you just think that it's Arsenal say, right, that this is the way we tried to meke out a nil all or try to stay in the game and maybe nick something. Didn't happen. But it's just that mindset kind of coming into things again. You know, it's four losses now out of five, you know, so with the players as well, you know, given the massive kind of slides that we've gone on when we start losing games, and you just don't want to see that kind of creep in. So we just need to kind of sort it. I mean, Brentford, and then we have a cup game against Villa kind of in between the Luton game as well, so it's time to start shaping up. But you just don't want to see the improvement in the players, you know. That's my worry, is that there's no one kind of seems to be stepping up, you know, and kind of saying, right, that fair enough, McNeil did towards the second half when Dyche came in, but apart from that, there doesn't seem to be improvements in our style and individual players, you know. And it's probably because we don't seem to have a structure, you know.
No one knows the job, especially in the middle.
But what did they do all week then? How are we having this conversation? Like,
it's just the thing, you know, that like a lot of them players weren't away on international duty and were in Finch Farm for the week and a half or the guts of 2 weeks, and to come out then and put on a display like that is just embarrassing, shocking, demoralising, all of them things, because there's just no, again, like, and this Onana lad is getting on my wick big time, because the match is finished, so we get a throw-in and he's there like a cheerleader. And I says, lads, if you do it on the pitch, like, we'll cheer you for 90 minutes, but you're not doing it. You're just sitting there. You're like a statue. You're just walking, and then like he makes a good tackle, and like I said, he's waving to the crowd, come on, come on, come on. But like, and then you see him during the week for Belgium, he nearly manned the match, and he's doing worldly things, and he's brilliant. And then he comes back and turns into an absolute plank for us again. So I just, now Colley said he's going to be player of the season, but he's wanted to score a hat-trick from every game now on. Again, I don't want to blame him, but he's the new fella who should be coming in, and he's this next superstar in the next big team, but he's just not shown it for us.
Yeah, he hasn't. You know, I suppose in fits and starts, you know, I think first of all, it's his position that he doesn't know where he's supposed to be playing, you know, and he needs to find a place. This is where you're going to play for for the season. You know, you're either going to be holding, you're going to be more attacking, whatever it is, find it for him. He played deeper for Belgium. I don't know if he wants to play him there. Can he afford to play himself and Ghana kind of as holders and kind of go 4-2-3-1 or something? But ultimately, I'd say he doesn't know where he's supposed to be. Right. And he's been told, you know, maybe you're free. Ghana's going to hold. Decore is going to push on and you're going to kind of be around the middle. But you don't see it, you know. And then I just think the game passes him by because he doesn't have an actual role. You know, he's been kind of told, oh, yeah, just go out and kind of pick it up. But we need to kind of go through him more because I think he's better when he gets the ball. He's driving at him. So he needs to be deeper, pick it up and maybe looking to pick passes from there. But just kind of disappears out of games too much for me for a fellow who needs to be influential.
But maybe,
you know?
Maybe you just need to take one of them out there, like Gann or Decore, and put something different. I keep saying Garner.
Maybe play Onana deeper and play Garner.
But Garner seems to be, that's well, going back to, we always say that when the team sheet comes out, that's more like talking points. But I couldn't believe that Garner was dropped. Because the discussion before the match was, will Garner sit in a right back and put Patterson in front of him, or drop Patterson and leave Garner there? But to drop the two of them was a shock, to be honest. Ashley Young, he did okay, but I think the yellow card affected his game, to be honest, because I actually thought Mikulenko done well against Saka.
And I think that's why he played. He's got a good record against Saka.
Yeah, exactly, because he did the same last year when we beat them.
Maybe when England and the Ukraine, he done well on him just only last week.
Yeah.
So I was surprised with that. But Ashley Young, for me, maybe he's there for leadership, you know, just being vocal on the pitch. Because you look at that team and say, right, who's the leaders there? You've Tarkowski, you know. But apart from that, you know, there's nobody really. You know, McNeil, Decore, Onana, Ghana, there's none of them who say, these are guys who are going to get you going, you know. They're just kind of going to grab the, you know, try to trophy fox into the fella and say, right, come on, you know. And so maybe he's there for that, try a bit of leadership and experience. But and even set pieces, pieces have been poor, like, you know. Right. It's soul destroying, you know. You've got a good position, edge of the box, and floats it in, and it's just so easy for Ray to come take it, or for a centre half to come and to put a head on it. Just, you know, no pace, and same at the corners, time and time again. It's, it mix it up a little bit here.
That's just on the corners as well. Like, and it's been highlighted last 3 or 4 weeks, and even when we played Doncaster in the Carabao Cup, the two lads on the Everton, Daz and Snod, said every time we could see the corner, every single team takes a short corner and they're in around us. So surely the fuck Deutsch, Stone or Wong can have a look at this and say, okay, lads, we need to send a man out and stop this short corner, because every single team is doing it against us. Play a short corner, run in, and all of a sudden they're at the edge of the box where we're a line of statues doing absolutely nothing. So points back to what you said earlier. Tactics, like, someone has to have a look at this, because it's an ongoing thing with corners.
Yeah, well, there's a reason people are doing it, because they know that we're not sending someone out.
This is it. Yeah, like,
walk, and eventually we're going to have to draw someone, and that's going to create the space then when it's late, and they can make their runners later, and you're in on top of the box. So it's
again, I see Dice when something happens, he goes to the two lads, and they have like a tablet or a laptop or them, and he's looking and says, look, but how, like you said, other teams will watch a video and Everton and say, right, they're shit at corners. They don't close down the short corner. Let's do it. Surely these are looking at the same video and saying, listen, we'll have to mop up here. Just put one man out there. That's all it takes, is one man as close as you can to the corner to stop this. Again, goes back to tactics and our lack of, that's the thing, lack of tactics. So I don't know how it changes. Do we just keep going on and going on and wait for a Deli or a Harrison or someone different to come in and change it? But it just has
look, You can wait for guys to come back, but ultimately we're going to lose others. You know, there's going to be injuries, there's going to be suspensions that are going to happen, and it's going to be very rare that we'll have everyone. So you can't be dependent on anyone in this, which is why squads are so important, and it's cost us for years. But I don't think we can depend on anyone. It's just a case of finding a way, you know, and trying to get a bit of confidence and get a few results together. But if we are to look at something positive, I thought Brant had done well.
The conversation after the match was just the two, it was more so who was shit, but the two, I thought Mikulenko done well, but I thought Brant, he's just so calm, and he looks like when he gets into trouble, he has the pace to get back there and mop up, but he just looks so assured. And then I'm very afraid that players like him, if we continue on this downward spiral, like he'll just say, listen, I'm out of here, I'm gone, I'm not hanging around to get relegated with these shower of fucking idiots. And just, I don't know.
And just on him as well, I thought, you know, the first 15 minutes, I thought he was a bit jittery, gave the ball away a couple of times.
Yeah,
but I think
that's nerves, yeah.
But a bit of maturity then to settle down, and he came into the game and thought he was excellent then for the rest of it. But 100%, you know, and that type of negativity around the dressing room, but it's going to be creeping into good players like himself, even Onana, who are going to be touted like and say, oh, there's a move there for you.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as that start creeping in and you say, right, the fellas want to be here, affects the dressing room, you know, if you know lads are thinking about getting out the door and stuff. So, but look, I suppose it seems all doom and gloom. We just got to wait and see if we can turn it around on Saturday and get on the board. But it's hard to... On the back of that, it's very worrying. There was just nothing for me. It was soulless. It was lifeless, and yeah, really, really poor.
Yeah. Another mask and sign to the shit bin. Okay. We're just looking to Saturday now. Again, I'm not expecting that now. This Brentford are a team. When they get the ball, they just go at you. They just run at you, and from different angles. That they're just the movement when they're on the front foot is just baffling. But I just don't think we have the lads to deal with that at the moment. So I just can't see us getting that out of the game.
I'd be very surprised if we did. I just think, you know, you talk about set up and knowing the way you're going to play and knowing your roles, and these guys have it to a T. You know, you see how well they're coached. Thomas Frank has, you know, you see progress in fellas year on year, and, you know, they're a joy to watch because they can mix it up a bit as well. You know, they're powerful, they're, you know, but yeah, we'll struggle. I think your man up front, Bueno, that's kind of...
Yeah, he's taken off on Tony. He's kind of slotted in there, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing really well, but they have outlets as well, kind of all over. Norgaard, is it? That was with
Norgaard, yeah.
Sheffield United, a good player as well. But, I mean, away from home as well. You know, maybe it's a case of right going away and you don't have the pressures of it. They're not Arsenal. You know, they won't try to dominate as much. They will dominate football against us, but not to the same extent. So we just kind of got to give ourselves an outlet. I think we got a point down there last year, but we were blessed. They hit the post to the bar about four times, You know, and they scored late on. But we just need to start creating, you know, if we can get something, kind of change the run of the game. So you've something to defend. If you have a lead to defend, like we defended on Sunday for longer periods, fair enough. But, you know, I'd worry again about Saturday and the fact that it's on TV again. The eyes are on you. You know, you're going to be fucking, you know, drilled, and people are going to be looking at you. I just think that pressure is too much for our team at present. They don't like it.
Again, this is another debate. Does Dom come back in, or do you stick with Beto? I think again, I felt sorry for Beto on Sunday because he got absolutely no service whatsoever. And any balls are humped up to him, there was no one like coming up with him to get flick-ons or knockdowns. Right? And so does Beto stay in?
I was actually surprised that Beto started. I thought that if Dom was ready, that Dom would have come back in as the fella to start. So, it's hard to know, really. I mean, yeah, it's hard to judge Beto on Sunday, given what was around him. So if you're saying that whether he was kind of not starting Dom because he wasn't able for 90, or whether it was a case of right that Beto has, I don't know, but probably if he's saying that, depending on how Dom is, I'd probably look to put Dom in.
Mm.
You know, and not as a fault of Beto's, but just the case of right, if you're the nine, you know, going, it's your position to lose, and then you've Beto coming off who's strong, who's got a point to prove. So if Dom is fit, I'd go with Dom up front.
Yeah, it's spot on that. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think Beto's done much to lose to start.
No.
Yeah, because he's done okay since he came in, and he's just getting no support whatsoever. There's nothing in or around him. So I think it's much of a much, as whether it's him or Dom. But like you said, I think you're right that Dom is the striker. He's the number one striker, if you want. And even though he went off injured, it was a facial injury, so he should be fit and he should be up to speed, match speed. So I think he will start. It's just midfield now. I don't know what we do there. Yeah, I think we have to take someone out of that three. And I think it will be Ghana, because one of them has to sit and just be told, just sit there. Draw a circle around Turner. Don't get out of there unless it's a corner or something. Just sit there. So I think Onana has to be that man who sits and can see a pass and come out. So I think Ghana should be dropped. Not dropped, just taken out, because it's not working.
Yeah, but if that's what they're going to do, well, then Onana needs to know the role. Because you look at Doncaster, was it?
Mm.
When Uncle Ghana came on, we were abysmal.
Half point, yeah.
Ghana changed it. So you just be worrying that they'll absolutely power through us. And Onana was on the pitch that day as well, you know. And it seems like you can't live with him, you can't live without him. But together, they're not effective, you know. So it's... I'd be worried about kind of changing, but I something needs to change, and I think it's just positional. Whether you go with two pivots, I don't know. But for me, it's just coaching. They need to know the roles. They need to, you know, is Decore the right man to kind of have there? And you say right that he can support and everything, but maybe you just need another actual midfielder in there and go with the one and that you're nearly going with, say, with your two wide men as your supporters to either Beto or Dom up front, rather than saying that Beto is going to get right up behind it. You have McNeil and say Dan Juma from the weekend, whoever it is that's starting, and they're pushing on. Yeah, you know, but, and you're nearly going 4-3-3.
Yeah, but that was the plan on Sunday, and it just never worked because no one got out. Beto was the only one who got out of there and gave us an actual out ball. So it comes back to knowing your role. Not just doing your role, knowing it. Knowing what to do. Like when we don't have the ball, right, you still go. And it ends up as a 4-3-3, but I just think that there's no cohesion or structure in there. And players are just making it up as they go along, to be honest. They're just making the call on the spur of the moment, which you're not going to get away with at this level. You're just not going to get away with. And then you do this, do that. But they should know what to do when they leave the dressing room. And it's just too many... Not even square pegs and round holes, just too many people not knowing their role within the team.
Yeah, that's the worry. Like, I mean, you said, you know, talk about improvement. And I suppose you're looking at it kind of in pre-season, you know, going back, because it doesn't seem that long ago. And you said, oh, you expect the kind of things to click into gear a little bit here. But geez, we're watching it for a while now, and it's... There's no improvement in the side and as a team and as a unit and kind of building partnerships and stuff. And that's the worry for me, is that there doesn't seem to be progression about kind of how we want to play.
Mm.
And that kind of, if runs, it's going to run into trouble. So I don't know, to be honest, is the answer. I'd be worried, starting to get more and more fearful as the weeks tick on, to be honest.
it's coming down the road, which is so, it's going to jump out if you can't see it. It's just going to come out and smack you. Oh, stop. Right, just predictions on Saturday. I'm going to go 2-0 to Brentford. Again, I just can't see it's getting anything. I said earlier that there's one of these teams who Brighton are the same. They can change personnel, but every single person who comes in or makes a change knows what they're doing, and they do it well as a team, and they're just... They're just straight ahead of us at the moment. So I'll go 2-0 Brentford.
I was just actually looking at it there and see that they haven't won a game at home yet this season. They have three draws.
Who hasn't scored in 10 years? Can I get my fourth goal?
But I think we struggle. I'll try to be positive and just think that we might kind of dig in and get something. I'm going to go 1-1.
Okay. Now, I didn't get any predictions off the last, but I presume it would be just similar. Resounding defeat. I don't know. Right, just before we go, we touch on this. Again, it's hard to touch on because it's all up in the air. 7-7-7, just quickly, Rich. There's so much noise going on about these lads that they're gangsters, they're shysters, they're just acid strippers, all this kind of stuff. But the guys, they come out and make this announcement and they say there'll be no further comment. If you make a pile of shit, you can just make a bigger boy. Everything in it, as I said, it's an absolute disaster.
Yeah, and I that was the one thing that stood out and said, we won't be talking about it again. You know, don't ask us, we're not talking about it. But you don't know what to think. I mean, you look at it from the outset and you see other clubs kind of and their experience with them. You want to believe, I suppose, that it's not in their interest for us to fail. So you think surely to Jesus that, you know, they're not investing big money to make things work. But, you know, the stories coming out and everything, the reports from everything, the money, is it available? You just hope that there's somebody else involved as well to back it. But I think it's that communication. Come out and tell us what's happening. You know, that there's money on the drip from this club. There's money coming in from here. And it's all just borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. And at the minute, it's really, really worrying. It's from the sounds of things, it looks like it's going to go ahead. You know, obviously there's a lot.
Everything's up in the air. No one knows. So,
no.
Again, we'll talk about it more when something becomes clearer down the line, which probably won't. Clear as mud, the Everton way. Right, Rich, thanks very much for today. Again, it's hard to get through. It's like a therapy session. It's just depressing and horrible. But I'm off to Ryder Cup next week, so I don't give a shit. I'll be forgetting about Everton, so I won't be here next week. But listen, Pat, thanks very much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Take care. All the best.
Bye, mate.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in joining the Irish Toffee Supporters Club, just send an email to memberships@irish-toffees.com or visit our website www.irish-toffees.com. Up the Toffees.